most of us have to hide sexual orientation or gender identity because there are some stories who made coming out and they were beaten or pushed out from the house and all the things, terrible things.
I never strategically set out to write gay songs. I just happen to be gay and proud, and I sing about the experiences and the relationships that are true to me.
Girls like girls and boys got a boyfriend. I like guys and they like me.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. France and Uruguay are each on the cusp of marriage equality, tradition fights liberation in Kyrgyzstan, and the debut of gay political power pop that's still radio-friendly. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 13th, 2013. France is on the verge of becoming the ninth country in Europe to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. The French Senate approved the Marriage for All Bill, which also includes adoption rights, by a final tally on April 12th of 179 to 157. The National Assembly passed the measure in February. Following a second review there to reconcile minor differences with the Senate version, ardent supporter President François Hollande is expected to sign the bill into law within a few weeks. His Socialist Party and its allies hold significant majorities in both legislative chambers, so passage has never been in serious doubt. There have been large and sometimes disorderly protests against the bill, led by the Roman Catholic Church and other religious and so-called family groups, for the past several months. But polls consistently show that a majority of French citizens support marriage equality, though fewer favor adoption rights. Medically assisted fertility services still remain closed to same-gender couples. But lawmakers have promised to address that issue in separate legislation in the near future. France has offered civil unions to both gay and lesbian and heterosexual couples since 1999. Government officials have suggested that the first civil marriages of same-gender couples could take place within 2 to 3 months.
Final approval of a marriage equality bill in Uruguay's Chamber of Deputies this week was also no surprise. The South American country was the first on the continent to offer civil unions to same-gender couples in 2008 and will now become the second, following Argentina in 2010, to enact full marriage equality. Married gay and lesbian couples will also be able to legally adopt children. An initial version of the bill passed in both legislative chambers in December, and a final version passed in the Senate on April 2nd. 71 of the 92 members of Uruguay's lower house reaffirmed the upgrade to civil marriage on April 10th. President José Mujica, a vocal proponent, has promised to sign the legislation after minor differences in the bill's language in each chamber are resolved. Jubilant supporters in the legislators' balconies erupted in celebration when the final tally was announced, while others outside the building hugged, kissed, and danced. Equality activists say that the first same-gender couples in Uruguay could get married in July or August.
But the president of Colombia's Senate, Roy Barreras, postponed debate on a marriage equality bill there that had been scheduled for April 10th. He blamed the delay on LGBT rights protesters for allegedly disrupting the participation at a forum against the bill by two senators, the country's attorney general, and religious leaders, calling the actions unacceptable behavior that will not be tolerated. BuzzFeed, however, reported that there's a difference of opinion as to who provoked the skirmish. LGBT activists, including Bogota City Councilwoman Angelica Lozano, said that things began to get out of hand when their protest signs were forcibly removed. Then people who appeared to be security guards for the two senators attacked the protesters. At least one of them, she claimed, called the protesters maricas, which translates to faggots. But according to the conservative Bogota City Councilwoman Clara Lucia Sandoval, that never happened. The aggression, she claimed, came from LGBT activists whose shouts of condemnation forced a confrontation in order to embarrass opponents of the marriage equality bill. There was no word on when Senate debate on the bill might be held.
Elsewhere, a brave gay activist in Zambia was arrested this week for disorderly conduct in a public place. Another report said that he was charged with inciting the public to take part in indecent activities. Paul Kasinkamona was taken into custody in the nation's capital, Lusaka, immediately after he argued on live television for the decriminalization of private consensual adult same-gender sex. Like 36 other countries on the continent, homosexual acts are illegal in Zambia. The Southern African nation punishes convictions with a minimum of 15 years and a maximum of life in prison. GayStar News said that police officers tried to cut the interview short, but managers of the television station refused. The 38-year-old activist spent 48 hours in jail before being released on bail. Kasinkamona's trial is expected to begin on May 15th. He faces up to a month in prison if he's convicted. His lawyers are suing for his unlawful detention in a separate case at Zambia's High Court. Traditional tribal leaders recently called on the Zambian government to cage same-gender couples after four of them tried to register their marriages at a registrar's office during the Easter weekend. Minister of Home Affairs Edgar Lungu told the Zambia Daily Mail that police should arrest the men.
Meanwhile, Singapore High Court Justice Quinton Loh rejected a legal challenge this week to the Asian city-state's law criminalizing gay sex. A gay couple, Gary Lim and Kenneth Chi, had sued the government demanding repeal of the British colonial-era penal code Section 377A. Loh said he based his ruling on parliamentary debate on the issue in 2007, which concluded that the law should remain but only be enforced if minors are involved or the act is in public. He wrote that, "Our courts cannot substitute their own views for that of Parliament." Having been together for 15 years, the disappointed gay couple said in a statement, "It is disheartening that we are criminals in the eyes of the law because of a segment of society that will not live and let live, but insists on pushing their version of religion and morality on us." Their legal team may take the case to the Court of Appeal, Singapore's highest judicial body.
In the landmark Lawrence v. Texas ruling in 2003, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that state laws banning forms of private adult consensual sex were unconstitutional. But those laws still remain on the books in more than a dozen states. Montana's House of Representatives voted to officially repeal its law this week, even though it was also struck down by the state Supreme Court in 1997 and was not being enforced. It punished sexual contact or sexual intercourse between two persons of the same sex or any form of sexual intercourse with an animal, with up to 10 years in prison. The repeal measure has already passed in the state Senate and now goes to Governor Steve Bullock. While he hasn't commented publicly on the bill, he's expected to sign it. According to Think Progress, three states still have statutes outlawing gay male sex. 10 others criminalize oral and anal sex, whether the acts are homosexual or heterosexual.
One of those states has advertised itself since 1969 as being for lovers. Virginia Attorney General and Republican gubernatorial hopeful Ken Cuccinelli, however, wants to limit that love to heterosexual missionary position. But the Fourth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals in Richmond issued an order this week denying his petition, asking the full 15-judge court to reconsider an earlier ruling by its 3-member panel that formally overturned the state's Crimes Against Nature law. Cuccinelli argued that the U.S. Supreme Court's 2003 Lawrence v. Texas ruling didn't apply to cases involving minors. The specific case, however, involved a heterosexual man who was convicted of soliciting a much younger girl, who was nevertheless of legal age, to engage in oral sex. The original 3-judge appeals court panel said that the legislature was free to pass a new law specifically outlawing sodomy between an adult and a minor, but that the Lawrence ruling rendered the existing Virginia sodomy statute unconstitutional. Openly gay state senator Adam Eben said that he's considering introducing a bill next year to formally repeal it.
And finally, conservative former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher died this week from a stroke at the age of 87. She hasn't enjoyed as much of a revered place in British history as the ardent supporters of her American contemporary, President Ronald Reagan, have secured for him. But like Reagan, Thatcher instituted radical economic policies that made homelessness a common sight where it had once been rare, and used gay people as scapegoats to gain political advantage. Thatcher earned her place in homophobic history by supporting one of the nastiest anti-LGBT measures of modern times, the infamous Section 28 of the Local Government Act 1988. It prohibited public schools from teaching the acceptability of homosexuality as a pretended family relationship. Even though no one was ever prosecuted for violating Section 28, a number of lesbian, gay, and bisexual student support groups in schools and colleges across Britain were closed because legal staff feared that their existence could violate the statute. But Section 28 also galvanized tens of thousands of people to hit the streets of London in protest and prompted actor Ian McKellen to come out as a gay man. The law was finally repealed in November 2003. Thatcher's critics campaigned this week to catapult a sort of tribute song to her from a 1939 MGM motion picture starring one of history's most enduring gay icons to the top of the April 13th BBC Radio 1 Top 40 Music Chart show. At last report, it was number 3. The skittish BBC, however, announced that the entire song would not air, but that a short clip would be played in what was called a news environment report about the song reaching a certain place in the chart. The abbreviated one-finger musical salute to the now-deceased Iron Lady probably sounded something like this.
Ding-dong, the witch is dead, witch, oh, witch, wicked witch. Ding-dong, the wicked witch is dead.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 13th, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep This Way Out on the air at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
Gay British singer-songwriter Matt Fishel is not thinking straight, but he's still radio-friendly later in the program. It's been years since there's been a dull political moment in Kyrgyzstan. Its 5.5 million people have survived two recent revolutions, ethnic strife, and economic stress. Same-gender sex has been legal there since 1998, but it's not usually a subject of discussion in Kyrgyzstan's traditional and nominally Muslim culture. In their latest audio postcard from the road, however, Sapphic Nomads Katie Cook and Maggie Young introduce us to one lesbian activist in the country's largest and capital city, Bishkek, who was willing to talk about LGBT life there.
Landlocked in Central Asia, the former Soviet Republic of Kyrgyzstan is a country full of surprises. Besides moonscape mountains, pristine lakes, and a shaky yet forward-marching democracy, Kyrgyzstan has also played host to several different LGBT organizations. The first of these organizations was created in the 90s as an HIV and AIDS prevention program, despite the fact that homosexual relationships were still illegal between men at the time. And though homosexuality has since been decriminalized, the LGBT community still faces huge challenges. We sat down with LGBT activist Lily Ten and asked her to describe the situation for the LGBT community in Kyrgyzstan.
I will try to describe the whole situation in a few sentences, but it's quite difficult because in one hand, the situation is quite good if compared with other Central Asian republics. But however, when you live in these conditions every day, it is quite difficult. Because first of all, LGBT community is invisible because of high level discrimination. And most of us have to hide sexual orientation or gender identity because there are some stories who made coming out and they were beaten or pushed out from the house and all the things, terrible things. Because on that moment when you made a coming out, you need more support than before. But unfortunately, at that moment, people faced with just misunderstanding and they lose the support that they very need. And for some of them, it's so hard that they can't recover themselves inside. Because all these things we have to hide have to lie for our families, which is very difficult to do. I mean, and it brings psychological problems, and it made people unsuccessful in many ways. And that's why the most number of the community drink a lot of alcohol and smokes a lot of cigarette and just spend their lives. And it's very sad. Another side of the life is that many people, they have to marry even if they don't want it. They have to have two lives, like for myself and for the society or for the relatives. And of course, but we are more optimistic and we hope that we can change something.
Not yet out to her family, Lily then shared some of her concerns about coming out to her own mother.
Well, I'm not out for my mother still, but because maybe it might be more easier to do it a few years later, but I mean earlier. But now I know so many difficulties with connected with coming out, and I'm not sure that I really want to do it. I really want it, but I don't know. There are of course the same problems like health, and she's old. I don't want to disappoint or somehow make her sad. But on the other hand, I think that I'm good person enough to be happy, to be open. Why not? But it's still a difficult question for me. I'm not sure actually why I didn't come out for her. Right now, we are not so close like mother and daughter, but I'm afraid to lose this small piece of my life. And I don't want she or I can spend this 10 or something years. I don't want to talk about this, but she's old enough and I don't want to lose these years. That's why I'm still thinking about, should I do or I shouldn't?
Finally, we asked Lily what she thinks the future holds for the LGBT community in Kyrgyzstan.
I think the next steps is for LGBT movement is more information for society. Preparation, if I can say like this, society to accept that the LGBT persons and that this is a normal, usual thing. And we don't need special rights. We just want our rights, human rights, universal. And that's all. Now we are, Labris is working very carefully with information and trying to send the accurate information about LGBT to society through our friendly media channels. Because society really need information, but it should be accurate, truthful information, and not a kind of joke or, porn or something. And then more we inform the society, then easier in the future it will be to lobby gay marriage or gay pride, I don't know. But we need time.
We'd like to thank Lily Ten for taking the time to share her story with us. To learn more about our time in Kyrgyzstan and our Sapphic Nomads project, please visit our website at www.nomaddocumentary.com. We look forward to bringing you more reports from the road. Till then, this is Katie Cook with fellow Sapphic Nomad Maggie Young, reporting from Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan, for This Way Out.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine, does as well, right here on this station.
He usually focuses on our queer music heritage, but Texas-based correspondent J.D. Doyle introduces us now to the debut album of a U.K. singer-songwriter.
I'm delighted to share with you an interview with Matt Fischel, who lives in London. I love his music, and I've started calling it political power pop. In recent years, he's put out several wonderful songs and videos, and it's music that never even thought about being in the closet. He's just released his debut CD called Not Thinking Straight, and in one of the songs, he has more than a crush on Johnny.
But Johnny is the head of our football team. He always boasts to his friends about women. I wonder if he carry on that way, if I told him all the places we've been in. And Johnny struts around on the football pitch with an arrogant smirk on his face. But he wears a smile of a different kind when he comes to stay over.
Where did you grow up, and at what age did you come out?
I grew up in Nottingham, in the East Midlands, in the UK. And to be honest, I think I just always knew I was gay, probably from about the age of 12, when I started to have feelings towards other guys. And I realized after a while that this wasn't necessarily what a lot of the other guys I was friends with were also feeling. They were all talking about girls. I came out to myself very young, probably about 13.
How autobiographical are your songs?
Very, I would say. My songs are all about real experiences that I'm having or that I've had. My songs, I think, are quite narrative. So I like to tell stories, and the stories are always based on real experiences that I've had, whether it's with boyfriends or with people or with the music industry. But they're all very definitely autobiographical.
How do you describe your music?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, I would describe it as fun, anthemic pop rock. You know, lots of big guitars, big choruses, lots of backing vocals.
I played one of your songs on the radio last week, and when I was introducing it, I called your music political power pop.
Brilliant. I love that. That's great.
Your songs, really, they are political.
Yeah, I was very influenced by a lot of punk bands, and so I've always loved artists who have something to say and who are political. I think being a gay artist, it's quite a fine line, because, you know, on the one hand, I'd say I never strategically set out to write gay songs. I just happen to be gay and proud, and I sing about the experiences and the relationships that are true to me. But at the same time, I appreciate that, you know, some of the stuff I have to say is quite political, in that I'm making a statement about certain areas of society. So I feel it is important to talk about these things and for gay men and women to have a voice and to put themselves out there.
Radio-friendly pop song is the opening track on the CD. Did you write that in response to any treatment you received in the music industry?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's based on mine and other people's experiences that I've spoken to and friends of mine that I have. But specifically to me, I've been told several times by executives in major labels who will remain nameless. You know, they say things like, oh, your songs are great, we love the vibe, we think they're really cool. You know, you just need to get rid of all references to other men, get rid of all the gay references, and we're good to go. And I've personally never been prepared to do that. And whenever I hear that, I just go, argh, and it kind of spurs me on to kind of, you know, to keep being true to myself. So with this song, I just wanted to write a fun, tongue-in-cheek response to that, where I basically said, you don't want me to talk about this, but hey, I'm gay, I like guys, I'm out, and I'm not ashamed about it.
Welcome to Tinseltown, kid, I'm gonna make you a star. You go
up the fire in your gut and everything that you need to go far. You're a talented guy, you can shake Hollywood to the ground. And with us on your side, plus your looks, you're gonna conquer this town. But face it, if you wanna break into this business, kid, you gotta play the part. And you'll never play a leading man if you let on to your fans the truth about who you are. Gonna get it, the kids already know. Some girls like girls, some boys got a boyfriend. I like guys and they like me. We hold hands, make out, and do all the things that lovers do. Some girls like girls, some boys got a boyfriend. I like guys and they like me. We hold hands, make out, and do all the things that lovers do.
The CD by Matt Fischel is called Not Thinking Straight, and you can find out more at mattfischel.com, and Fischel is spelled F-I-S-H-E-L. You can hear the rest of this interview at queermusicheritage.com. This is J.D. Doyle, and you are listening to This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Michael Lebeau, Sapphic Nomads, Katie Cook, and Maggie Young, and J.D. Doyle contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride. Matt Fischel performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by the Yavanna Foundation and by our generous listener supporters. Thank you. Visit thiswayout.org to check out the faces behind the voices, read some 25th anniversary messages, and add your own. Thiswayout.org is also the home for links to our podcast, blog, and Facebook fan page. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WDIY Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, KKRP, Collington, Oklahoma, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned!